Today is Transfiguration Sunday. I don't know if you knew that. On Wednesday, we're going to begin a new season. Wednesday is Ash Wednesday, which begins the season of, do you know? Lent. We'll have a special service at 6:30 here, by the way. And what I think is going to be really special about this service is it's an opportunity for our confirmands to share their statements of faith. And so that, I know, will be one of the high points of the sermon service. Transfiguration Sunday is the idea is that Lent is a time of reflection and sacrifice. And so if you're going to go into a season like that, it helps to have a vision of what's carrying you through it. But we didn't want to give away the surprise of the resurrection at the end. And so in the Middle Ages, the focus of the Sunday before the beginning of Lent came to be the Transfiguration. The story of the Transfiguration from the Gospel according to Mark goes like this. 6 days later, Jesus took with him Peter and James and John and brought them to a top of a high, very high mountain where they were alone. And he was transfigured before them, and his clothes were amazingly bright, brighter than they had ever would ever be able to be bleached white. Elijah and Moses appeared there talking with Jesus. Peter reacted to all this by saying, "Jesus, Rabbi, it's good that we're here. Let's make three shrines, one for you and one for Moses and one for Elijah." He said this because he didn't know what to say, for the three of them were terrified. And then a cloud overshadowed them, and a voice spoke from the cloud and said, "This is my son, whom I dearly love. Listen to him." Suddenly, looking around, they no longer saw anyone except Jesus. As they were coming down the mountain, he ordered them not to tell anyone what they had seen until after the human one had risen from the dead. Transfiguration just means a change in appearance. Jesus took with him a couple of friends, Peter and James and John, and went up onto the mountain. And suddenly Jesus' appearance was changed. He became like a glowing white, a brilliant white. Then they saw Moses and Elijah, two of the greatest figures of the Old Testament. Then they were gone. There was this cloud, and out of the cloud there was a voice. That idea caught my attention, that God spoke out of a cloud. It occurred to me that this isn't the only place in the Scripture where you hear a voice or get some vision of God out of a cloud, is it? For example, in the Old Testament, Moses goes up on a mountain after he has led the Israelite people out of the land of Egypt. He goes up onto a mountain. He gets to talk with God face to face up on the mountain. But no one except Moses is allowed to go up onto the mountain. Except that there comes a point where God has something so important to say, he wants everybody to be able to hear it. And so, you know what? He talks to everybody, but first there's, you can probably guess what's going to happen. There's a cloud that descends from the mountain. The story goes like this from the book of Exodus. "I'm going to come to you in a dense cloud in order that the people may hear when I speak to you and so that they will trust you ever after." What's so important that God wants to tell it to the Israelite people directly? You probably know. That's when he tells to them the Ten Commandments. There's another place where a cloud appears, Elijah. You know the story of Elijah? He has a friend named Elisha, and they are kind of mentors to each other. There's a point where Elijah is about ready to leave the world. They're by a stream, and God's going to take Elijah up into a cloud. Elisha stays behind. And you know what Elisha sees as Elijah's going up into the sky, up into heaven? A cloud. Appears as a whirlwind or a funnel cloud. In the last book of the Bible, in the book of Revelation, there's a guy named John who has a vision of Christ coming again. At the very beginning of the book, he says, "Look." You know what he's going to see? Look. Can you tell who's coming? Christ will be coming with the clouds, and every eye will see him. That got me to wondering, why is it important for God to speak from a cloud? Why would that be important? And here's the conclusion that I've come to, or my best guess right now. I think maybe it's when our way is obscured that we're most open to hearing God speak. When we don't see a way through, that we're most willing to trust in God to say, "Here, let me lead you." So the lesson in that, I think, is if you feel like you're in a cloud, if you feel like your way isn't very clear right now, then maybe you're in the perfect place to listen to God speaking to you a way forward. You may be in the perfect place to listen and hear God speak. When Jesus heard this voice from the cloud, do you remember what it said? It said, "This is my Son, whom I dearly love." And then the last phrase there was, what should we do? Listen to him. How do you listen to Jesus? What do you do to listen to what Jesus has to say? I love the Psalms, and I especially love a line in the 46th Psalm that goes like this. Be still and know that I am God. Is there enough stillness in your life that as God speaks, you'll be able to hear? This seemed like a perfect place for another story about Elijah. Elijah, you know, probably is one of the prophets that takes on the false prophets of Baal, slaughters all the false prophets of Baal, which doesn't make a lady named Jezebel very happy. And so Jezebel decides that she's going to go after Elijah. Apparently, Elijah had no problem taking on a bunch of false prophets, but one angry woman was more than he could handle, and so he decided to run for his life. So he took off, went out into the wilderness, and was in hiding. He's in hiding looking for God to show up. There is this mighty wind, and he thought maybe God was in the wind. Do you remember this story? Was God in the wind? No God in the wind. Then there was this earthquake. There was this horrible earth-shaking earthquake. He thought maybe God was in the earthquake. But was God in the earthquake? Not in the earthquake either. Then there was a fire. And he thought maybe the Lord was in the fire. Was he there? Not in the fire either. Do you remember what comes next? The sound of sheer silence, sheer or utter silence. And in that silence, there was a still, small voice, the voice of God speaking. Elijah speaks to God and said, God, I think I've overdone it. I expected this to be hard, but I didn't expect it to be this hard. I'm feeling really alone here. And God, in that still, small voice, speaks back to Elijah and says, these are my paraphrase, quit whining. Says, let me show you what you need to do. We've still got work that needs to be done, but I will give you some help. I'm sure that you know listening is more than just doing nothing. It takes a lot of work to be a good listener. You have to pay attention. You have to ask good questions. You have to care enough about the other person to listen for what they are saying to you. A good example of the importance of listening, I think it came from a book that was published a couple of years ago by a guy named John Maxwell. Do you know the name John Maxwell? He wrote a book called Leadership Gold. And in it, he tells a story about two rednecks who are out hunting. They're out in the wilderness, out in the forest, and they're looking for game. When all of a sudden, one of them just falls down. His eyes roll back in his head. The other one gets really worried about his friend, doesn't know what to do. He kind of panics, and so he pulls out his phone, calls 911, gets the 911 person, says, my friend is dead, what can I do? The 911 person comes back on the phone and says, take it easy, I can help. Just listen to me and follow my instructions. First, let's make sure he's dead. There's a pause, then this really loud gunshot. Then the guy comes back on the phone and said, yep, I'm sure he's dead. Now what? My point is this. There's a difference between hearing words and listening to what somebody else is saying. Sometimes when we don't listen to what's being said, people get hurt. We're given two ears and one mouth for a reason. It's important to be skilled listeners. It will make us better friends, more understanding, and less confused. So what are you doing to actively listen to what God is speaking to you? Suddenly looking around, they saw no one except Jesus. It's true that Jesus was completely human, but it's also true that Jesus was special in a way that none of us ever will be. He was the only Son of God. I don't know about you, but I've never had anything like this happen to me. I've never felt like I was shining white and had people say, Brad, you look like you're clearer than bleach would be able to get you. I've heard occasionally people referred to as glowing, but I don't think this is the same thing that's being spoken of. Jesus was special. I think that's part of what's being communicated here in a way that none of us ever will be. So let me ask, who is Jesus to you? What does it mean for you to say that Jesus is Lord or Jesus is the Christ? A number of years ago, there's a story from the days when people got along around on railways about a railway crew that was working on the lines, trying to make sure that the rails were all straight and the ties were all in place. When along down the track, it was a hot day and they were sweating and they were working hard. Along down the track comes a very slow-moving locomotive with one car, very luxurious car, even had air conditioning in those days. As this short little train gets to the place where this work crew is working, it slows down and comes to a stop. A very well-dressed gentleman gets out of the back car, yells at a very friendly but very loud voice at one of the people who was working on the crew, says, "Dave, is that you?" One of the guys was Dave. He looks at who's in the railway car, looks back at him and says, "Jim, it sure is. It's really good to see you." It was Jim Randall and Dave Anderson, and they carried on a conversation. Jim Murphy, apparently, was the president of the railway at the time, and the two of them talked for about an hour. And then Jim Murphy got back on his railway car and headed out. The rest of Dave's construction crew was really curious. How is it that Dave, part of their work crew, knows the president of the railway company? And so they asked him, "How is it possible that you know the president of the railway company? You seem to be friends." He said, "Well, yeah, actually the two of us started out on the same crew together 23 years ago." One of his friends said, "Well, if you started out on the same railway crew 23 years ago, how is it that he now is the president of the railway company and you're still here working on the line?" And he is supposed to have said, "Well, when I went to work for $1.75 an hour. He went to work to build a better railway." Vision makes a difference. Is there something about Jesus that's that important to you, that gives you a vision for what you're doing, that sends you on a mission that's so important that it makes a difference in the world? If there is, then remember the last part of the story is they had to go back down into the valley. We all have to go back down into the valleys. On the mountain, we can see God and talk to the God Almighty, but in the valley, there will be people who are sick and needy. On the mountain, we hear God's calming voice that tells us who Jesus is. In the valley, there will be those who will take every opportunity to argue about who Jesus is. On the mountain, the disciples are in the mood for worship. In the valley, they argue about which one of them is greatest. On the mountain, the glory of God is revealed. In the valley, Jesus will challenge us to be his humble servants. We all know that there are going to be those valleys. And so I think the message of this is we need to have a clear enough vision of God, of Jesus in his glory, that it will sustain us through those times when we go down into the valley. No one said this more clearly, maybe, than Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. in a speech that he gave on the eve of his assassination on April 3, 1968. He was at the Mason Temple in Memphis, and he said these words. He said, "I don't know what will happen to me now. I've got some difficult days ahead. But it doesn't matter what happens to me now because I've been to the mountaintop. And I don't mind. Like anybody, I would like to live a long life. Longevity has its place. But I'm not concerned about that now. I just want to do God's will. And he's allowed me to go up to the mountain, and I've looked over, and I've seen the promised land. I may not get there with you, but I want you to know tonight that we as a people will get to the promised land. And I'm happy tonight. I'm not worried about anything. I'm not fearing any man. My eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord." He had a clear enough vision of Jesus on the mountain that was able to see him through the valley. I was in this conversation this week, and we were talking about coming to church. This person was talking about how one of the places that they hear God speak, where they feel the presence of God, is when they get together in church. That's a really important part. This person comes like every single Sunday because that's one of the places that God meets her, is in church. She says, "Not all the time, and not always in church. Sometimes there are other places that God also meets me." But she said, "Sometimes I feel like I'm just kind of sleepwalking through life. And one of the places that I find that daze lifts is when I'm in church." So I asked her, "So you find this every Sunday? Every Sunday you go to church and you meet God there?" And she said, "No, not every Sunday. It happens about 1 in 8 Sundays." So then I asked her, "Okay, why don't you just come 1 in 8 Sundays then? Show up on those times when God meets you." And you know what she said? And I thought this was really profound. She said, no, I show up every Sunday because I never know which one of those eight it's going to be. She had a vision of God who shows up one of every eight Sundays or so that sees her through the other two. I know some of those other Sundays, the sermons aren't so great and worship isn't always horribly inspiring, but God shows up. Peter and James and John are going to go through some very dark valleys. Peter is going to deny that he even knows Jesus. James will be the first of the disciples to be martyred for his faith. And what keeps them going through? Visions like this one of Jesus on the mountaintop. So if you're feeling like you're in a cloud right now, I hope that you will hear God speak from that cloud. I hope that you'll see something special in Jesus, that you'll find the time to be able to listen to what he is telling you, and then you'll be able to focus on where he is leading you, so that when the valleys come, the vision will carry you through. During Lent, we're going to listen to a vision that God has for us as we explore some of the servant stories through the scriptures, some of the great stories of servants. Hopefully, we'll listen for how God is making us into better servants also. Remember again, this is my last chance to plug it, Wednesday is Ash Wednesday. Our confirmation class will get to share their confirmation stories. And later in this service, we have somebody who's going to share in one of those mountaintop experiences as they come before us ready for baptism. And so to prepare us for that mountaintop, I offer this video as a way of getting us thinking towards the waters of baptism.